Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
We talk about familiarity. Well, you can be familiar in a sense that it's causing isolation in your marriage.
Ryan Frederick on Focus on the Family Minute.
Or you can have a familiarity where you can walk into a crowded room and you can look for your wife and you can make eye contact with her and cast her, you know, some sort of smirk or a glance or a wink or something that you know is going to speak to her. That's built over time. And so the same thing happens in terms of your communication culture in your home, right? So either your shared language is going to be fostering a healthy communication culture. That's going to be something that your kids are going to observe. They're going to want to care because it's building life. Or you can have a shared language that is, you know, negative or, you know, you're walking on eggshells all the time because you're always waiting for the next explosion to happen type of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if you're going there with that, but yeah, couples can share language in many ways and they can share a culture and certainly they build it together.
More at familyminute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles. Paso Robles Glass is exclusively presenting the new Milgard Trinzic Series windows and doors. If you're looking for a vinyl window frame that is contemporary with modern crisp lines, you'll love the new Trinzic Series from Milgard and Paso Robles Glass. Give your home a clean, sleek look with less vinyl and more glass to enjoy your view. Whether it's new construction or replacement, Paso Robles Glass has a window for you. And remember, they are the replacement window masters. Call Paso Robles Glass for your free in-home sales consultation for Milgard Trinzic windows and doors. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014. That's 238-4014 for Paso Robles Glass.
Get it fast, save some cash. Paso Glass is where it's at.
Little darling, here comes the sun. Yep, it's that time again, and you'll be splashing around in your pool. Are you ready? Stop by Stove and Spa Center in Atascadero and stock up on premium pool care products from BioGuard to properly maintain your pool the quick and easy way. Choose from convenient, easy-to-use pool care systems or a host of individual products and accessories to get that sparkling, clear pool water you love. Visit Stove and Spa Center in Atascadero for advice and all the BioGuard products you need, little darling.
Good afternoon and welcome to Free Talk California with Susanna Luthi on AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM. Phone lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. California Free Talk is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. Ask about the daily specials. And now, Free Talk California on The Right Choice, KPRL.
California. I'm Susanna Luthi, and I am very excited about today's show. Jennifer Lal is my guest. She is the president of the Center for Bioethics and Culture, which is actually housed here in California, up in the Bay Area. She is a prolific maker of documentaries, as well as an author, really exploring the dark side of medical malpractice and the medical industry, tackling topics that very few people are willing to even start probing, including the fertility industry, and lately, which is the topic we are going to cover today, surrogacy. She has been traveling the world talking about surrogacy. She is here just in the wake of a trip to Europe where she was speaking in Rome and Spain. And she is obviously very active as well in investigating the gender medicine industry as well. So should be a great show, and we will probably be touching on topics that may make people uncomfortable because surrogacy especially is a topic that isn't really discussed in polite society. Because in our current iteration of our culture, it is not considered polite and politically correct, whether you're conservative or liberal, to question the desire of adults to pursue what they want, whatever the ethical questions that may come up. And whether it's pictures of smiling Kardashians with the baby they bought from another woman who carried it because they didn't want to hurt their figures by having the baby themselves, or, you know, the happy story of an infertile couple who obtained a baby through surrogacy. It's just not something we talk about. So this will be an interesting discussion, and stay tuned. Today was an interesting day for me. I have not been able to watch much of it, but Anthony Fauci is testifying to Congress about COVID, and both questions about the lab leak, which he used to dismiss as a conspiracy theory, and the potential role of the U.S. in creating COVID, and his claims that turned out not to be true about the vaccine. This is an interesting day because, as I've mentioned on the show, I was a health reporter in D.C. during the pandemic. I remain pretty ashamed of how little I pushed back out of fear for my job, but really it was cowardly. When I first began to question the narrative about the lockdowns, which we were pushing very, very hard at my publication, questioning anything about the vaccine, I did question vaccine mandates and mask mandates, but in a timid enough way that it really didn't make much of a difference. I ended up leaving the health beat over COVID and never really made that clear to the higher ups. Never really spoke up the way I should have. And that's all coming back to me today because the Republicans in Congress who are leading this probe of Fauci and leading the questioning of him are being equally timid. And it's interesting to see that 4 years later, the people who suffered, had their bank accounts emptied, who had their kids' education completely disrupted. I would include myself in that pool of people because my stepdaughter was in kindergarten and first grade when she was basically blocked from the classroom. And it has really, really been a travesty that I see firsthand. So all of us who, and then obviously there are all the people who were fired because they wouldn't get the vaccine. There has been just no accountability for the people who pushed this, for the media who pushed this. And that's just all coming, bubbling to the surface today during the Fauci testimony. And it's pretty remarkable how timid lawmakers who really have nothing to lose are being. And then obviously the Democrats in the House who are part of this panel questioning Fauci are completely deferential to him and apologetic to him for having to go through this inconvenience about answering questions for policies that he promoted and put as blanket policy, even though he's unelected. But he was so influential in how our economies are, how our small businesses were shuttered, how our kids were kept out of school, people lost their jobs. He was so instrumental in all of those things, regardless of what he says now about how he never made any policy, that it is frustrating to see him not being held to account. And to that end, there was an interesting debate I don't know how many of you saw that it even happened, but Patrick Bet David, who is an entrepreneur, has a channel. He hosted a podcast debate between Dave Smith, who's a libertarian he's very active in the Libertarian Party. He's also a comedian. He actually debated Chris Cuomo, who, as you all know, what is the brother of one of the big lockdown governors, the governor of New York. And during COVID, he helped push all the mainstream narratives about COVID from his post as an anchor at CNN. And Dave Smith debated him and really called him out for how he promoted lockdowns and how he mocked anyone who took ivermectin, how he really made fun of figures like Joe Rogan, who questioned all the dominant narratives about COVID. And that debate has really been going viral the last couple of days. And I think the reason is that it's basically been the only chance for anyone to hold a very influential figure, in this case, a media figure, hold their feet to the fire and say, look at what you did. Look at what you pushed on us. And there has been no reckoning. So all of that to say, I've decided that I'm going to do a COVID show because I feel some guilt about what I helped promote as a former health reporter with a national outlet. And granted, you know, a lot of it was predetermined of what we could say and what we could not say, but we all have agency. And I did not exercise mine. I just reached out today to an old source of mine at the Trump White House, who is also kind of in the heart of this, and he's agreed to come on. So I'm not quite sure which date, but hopefully in the next few weeks, we will have a COVID episode. So all of you who might have been hurt by the lockdowns, by California policy, can ask questions and vent and do whatever we need to do, because there is no reckoning of the officials who are in charge. They're all still in charge. They're all still powerful, and no one's apologized. So that is my rant for today. Let's quickly move on to some California news before our guest comes on after the break. So we talked a lot, and including in the last few shows, actually, we talked a lot about the battle in schools over teachers and administrators secretly transitioning kids to new gender identities. We've talked about how our own California Attorney General, even though he is fighting to require schools to do this, has acknowledged that he can't enforce state guidance, which says that this is what schools should do. And this is all happening, obviously, as parents are fighting back, and two school districts have already had to pay out six-figure settlements over this question. One settlement to the mother of a child who was secretly transitioned and basically indoctrinated into believing she was a boy, and one to a teacher who was fired because she said she would refuse to lie to parents and refuse to let boys into girls' restrooms as a PE teacher. So anyway, so since that last segment we did, we were off last week, and kind of unsurprisingly, California Democrats have introduced a last-minute bill that is already being fast-tracked through the legislature. It's pretty sure it's going to pass. It's called Assembly Bill 1955, for those of you who have a pen in hand and want to maybe call the legislature about it. This bill would make it illegal for teachers or staff to tell parents if their child is being transitioned at school. It would also prohibit any discipline of teachers who may have helped the gender transition. And unsurprisingly, the bill is backed by the public schools chief, Tony Thurmond. He is running for governor in 2026. He's made promoting gender ideology a priority, even as California students lag behind in reading and math. and also influential lawmakers, including the chair of the State Assembly's Education Committee. So it's probably going to pass. It's on an expedited timeline. And it is coming, obviously, as secret gender transitions have become a losing proposition for California schools. More and more parents, as I mentioned, are speaking out. Teachers are speaking out. And it is also the first in the nation bill of this kind, because school districts have been at the forefront of pushing these policies. State leaders who in blue states who really want these policies tend to kind of, you know, they promote them at the state level, but at the same time, they're like, well, this is actually a school. This is a school decision. This is a school policy. And that's been the case, experts have said, because once it hits the point of being a state law, then it is more easily challenged in court, and they are likely going to be struck down ultimately as unconstitutional. So it's really not been pushed forward through state law. It's really been pushed at the district level. So this bill had a hearing last week, which I did watch. It was quite something. So first of all, there were two Republicans on the panel, and they basically demonstrated why Republicans are losing on this issue in blue states. And it really kind of showcased their weakness in the legislature. They were so apologetic for saying that they were going to oppose the bill, and they did both vote against the bill. But they basically conceded all the points that Democrats were putting forward as reasons for pushing this bill. They were like, we understand that you want to protect the children. We understand that this is, that gender dysphoria is a very difficult issue for these kids. Completely ignoring the fact that the schools often put this, the whole idea of gender dysphoria, into kids' minds to begin with. It is not a widespread phenomenon. It is pushed by social media. It is a social phenomenon. It is a social contagion. And no, kids are born in the wrong body. And that was also not made clear by the Republicans on the committee. And they all honestly kind of seemed to waver about what side they were on. Then Erin Friday, who has been on this show, she's been basically the one-woman force fighting this in California, with an army of parents, but she really, really puts herself out there. She is a lawyer, and she presented the legal arguments in opposition, and she was treated so rudely. I mean, basically dismissed at every turn when she could be, often cut off. She was given these abrupt warnings that she could only comment on matters of law, not policy, if it seemed that she was going to veer into talking about the actual policy. And meanwhile, the witnesses who were advocating for the bill were, of course, allowed kind of endless opportunity to say whatever they wanted without any limits. So it was a long hearing, and I will give the committee chair this much credit, that he did allow debate to happen, and he did kind of let the debate flow and continue over a couple of hours. But even so, it was just a very blatant example of just how one-sided this whole thing was, and the two Republicans on the committee were pretty deferential and concessionary, conceding points that they should not have been conceding. So anyway, there was also very little discussion about what's actually happening in the schools, and there was very little discussion about the various cases that we have talked about on this show that are happening on this issue, from the mother in Monterey, the single mom who became the first California parent to sue her district. And she sued her district because her daughter was basically sought out by two teachers who later admitted, and it was caught on a recording at a teachers union state conference, about how they stalked student web searches to recruit members for their secret transgender club. And so that's a case that where there's been a settlement. Then there's also been the case that's now on appeal in the Ninth Circuit against Chico Unified School District, very similar case. And then there are two different cases filed by teachers who have been told by their school districts they have to lie to parents and they have to participate in this whole thing. And one of those teachers has just won a $360,000 settlement against her school. And then the other two teachers were ordered to be reinstated after being put on leave. And they won their case. So anyway, we will see where this goes. Obviously, in the legislature, it's very likely to pass. This bill is likely to be signed into law by the governor. And what will happen? Will this be the end for parent fights in California, or will it be the instigator for this whole issue to go before the Supreme Court? Sarah Parshall Perry, who is a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and she tracks school gender policies across the country. She was kind of optimistic. She said that if this bill passes, it would give parents and teachers, quote, the injury sufficient for standing in a lawsuit against the state. The only other state that has really tried something like this was Colorado. Colorado tried this earlier this year. They tried to establish kind of top-down rules for the state to socially transition kids, and ultimately they watered it way down. And the Colorado legislature is very far left. It's also a Democratic supermajority, and there are some very, very interesting, shall we say, activists who are in that legislature, and they ended up watering down the legislation. The final version deems it discrimination to call a gender-confused student by his or her given name, but it does not mention transitioning them secretly behind parents' back. Anyway, that is a little roundup, a little snapshot of what's happening in the state. We'll be back right after these messages from our sponsors to speak with Jennifer Lahl. Stay with us.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care. All your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Deborah Valentine. The nation's former infectious disease director, Dr. Anthony Fauci, testified on Capitol Hill about his decisions during the viral pandemic. Dr. Fauci denying using his personal email to skirt government record laws.
To the best of my recollection and knowledge, I have never conducted official business via my private email.
During his opening statement, Dr. Fauci denied attempting to suppress the theory that COVID-19 originated from a lab in Wuhan, China. Hunter Biden on trial in Wilmington, Delaware. Fox's Jessica Rosenthal reports jury selections underway in the first son's federal drug trial.
First Lady Jill Biden, Ashley Biden, Hunter's sister, and Hunter Biden's wife, Melissa, are all in federal court in Wilmington, Delaware, supporting him as the judge moves through jury selection, which is expected to take up to 3 days.
Hunter Biden has pleaded not guilty to federal charges of lying on gun purchase forms. America's listening to Fox News.
Did you know you can save $1,200 with a new federal tax credit on energy-efficient shades? Just ask Knight's Window Treatment Pros. Reduce your monthly utility bills with shades designed to provide year-round insulation at the window. When temps dip or when they heat up, you'll love the savings. For details, call or visit Knight's Carpets and Interiors. 805-237-1400. 3320 Ramada Drive. KnightsCarpet.com.
Welcome back to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi, and joining me is Jennifer Lahl, author, documentary maker, and anti-surrogacy activist, here to talk about surrogacy. Thanks for joining us, Jennifer.
Thanks, Susanna. It's good to be with you.
Good to have you. So you've been you've just been back from a whirlwind Europe trip, it sounds like, talking about this issue. I kind of want to start opening this up because I do know it is one that is, it's a topic that's a very touchy in this country and this society. And I was just wondering, in your view, why is it so difficult for us enlightened adults, supposedly, to talk about the subject? We can so readily condemn other uses and abuses of women and children, but why do people start squirming when you mention surrogacy? Because I've seen it when I bring it up to friends. No one really wants to talk about it. No one wants to talk about the ethical red flags. None of the uncomfortable truths about this. Why is that?
Well, let me just start by saying I don't identify myself as anti-surrogacy. I identify myself as pro-maternal child health. I was a pediatric critical care nurse in the state of California for close to 20 years. And so I have a deep interest in medical ethics and the well-being of pregnant moms and their babies once they're born. We know that surrogacy is very, very high risk. It's higher risk than a woman's natural pregnancy. And I think the general public hasn't even thought about the fact that it's risky and dangerous. We've had two surrogate mothers that we know of die in the state of California as complications of their surrogate pregnancy. Most people think, oh, here's a nice couple. Here's a gay couple that can't have babies. Here's a sterile, infertile couple that's struggling, heterosexual. This woman wants to help. In reality, almost all of surrogacy practice in the United States is commercial surrogacy, meaning women are paid. I don't think you can distinguish paying a woman to have a baby for you from the buying and selling of a human being.
I love that clarification about pro-mother and baby, because that is how I think about it, too. I did not know that two surrogates in California have died. Do we know anything about those cases?
Yeah, I mean, the one most recent one is, her name is Michelle Reeves, and she was doing a second surrogacy for a heterosexual couple. It's very common that couples will come back to the same surrogate and say, we're ready to have a sibling. Would you have another baby for us? And Michelle died of a rare complication called amniotic embolism, which is where they get basically an embolism in the amniotic fluid that, you know, causes, in her case, immediate death. The other woman was Crystal Wilhite. I don't really know the cause of her death, but she posted pictures of her in the hospital when she was in the hospital as complications from her surrogate pregnancy, and then she died. I don't know quite what the complications were because she didn't post that on her Facebook page. My own peer-reviewed research that I've done with my colleague, Callie Fell, we interviewed over 95 gestational surrogates in the United States and compared their own pregnancies with their own children with their surrogate pregnancies. And our research copied two other important studies, which all have proved that surrogate pregnancies are much, much higher risk. Higher rates of preeclampsia, higher rates of maternal hypertension, higher rates of gestational diabetes. Not even mentioning this, you know, the separation of mother and baby at birth. Which is unlike adoption. I mean, adoption is not a wanted situation. It's unfortunately oftentimes a sad situation. But this is a case where we intentionally separate moms and babies. And the New Yorker just had a great article just a couple of days ago. Pardon me, I'm really jet lagged, so I'm not sure exactly when it came out. I read it yesterday. But it talks about the fetal cells and how in a pregnancy, the cells between mother and baby live on and on and on throughout the lives of the mother and the child, and how those cells actually help repair injuries and wounds within the bodies. And those cells go on and get passed on to siblings. So this notion that she's just an easy bake oven, the baby doesn't mind, the mother doesn't mind, there's no big deal, it's just the stuff that you want to see on People magazine.
Mm-hmm. It's become such a celebrity cause, too. The Kardashians kind of made it famous, although I saw one viral clip. I can't remember which Kardashian sister because I don't really follow the Kardashians. But one of them was talking about, I mean, it was really kind of brutal, talking about how she didn't feel bonded with her son that she bought through surrogacy. And then she was talking about how she didn't want to, she wished that the birth could be delayed or she wouldn't have to pick up the baby in time because she really needed a few more days without the baby. I mean, it was such a picture of how transactional the entire process was.
Yeah. And I'm like you, I don't follow the Kardashians either, but I do follow surrogacy. So it was Khloe Kardashian was the one that was being so candid and honest. And, you know, to her credit, she was very honest that she didn't feel connected. I mean, we know, I mean, again, as a pediatric nurse, we know that moms and babies bond in utero. I mean, it's not something magically that happens after the baby is born. I mean, it actually, you know, deepens and grows that bonding after the baby's born. But, you know, here are babies, they're being deprived, you know, breastfeeding and nursing their, you know, from their mother's breast. And we know that those are good health benefits for mother and baby. There was a recent report that just came out last month that showed, you know, we have a huge problem with internationals coming to the United States. And this one report that was put out by a very posh, you know, academic journal said that over 42% of the internationals that come to the United States to buy babies are single men over the age of 42, and they're overwhelmingly coming from China. And we know that the Chinese come here because they get a pathway to citizenship, because a baby born in the United States, doesn't matter who the parents are, by birth, you are a United States citizen. We have a huge problem. It should be a red flag. Why are single men in their 40s coming to America to rent wombs and buy babies?
I have a question. I mean, this is more of a political question, but obviously, when I first started looking into this, I looked at what state laws regulate or don't regulate this practice, and California, which, yeah, I mean, you're a Californian, so you know, California is just such a highly regulated state. Everything we do seems to be regulated. But when it comes to surrogacy, it actually has some of the most lax rules. And obviously, there are big hospitals in Southern California, especially that are really prominent in the whole fertility industry. But why is it that California became so lax? Is this anything you've looked into? And what are there any states that have taken a more cautious approach?
Well, let's start with your question about California, and then I can make a few comments about the national landscape. Actually, I would say California is heavily regulated. We have very strong laws that regulate assisted reproductive technology, especially in the space of what I call third party. So the buying of eggs from young girls at Stanford or UCLA, or the renting of wombs from mothers. The fact is, though, that our regulation and our laws in California heavily privilege the moneyed interest. So we have laws in California such that a surrogate, before she is even pregnant with the surrogate baby, legally waives and severs her maternal rights, which is very much unlike adoption. A mother does not sever her maternal rights till well after that baby is born, and she says, yes, I do want to sever my maternal rights. So the law in California, which I think is really kind of chilling, the fact here's a woman who's not even pregnant yet, and she has to legally waive her maternal rights because we don't want her to have any rights to change her mind and say, I can't surrender the baby. She is bound by contracts. I've read many, many surrogate contracts drafted and executed in California, where she says legally she will terminate the pregnancy if the purchasing parents ask her to. She will reduce down the pregnancy if she's carrying twins or triplets to whatever the purchasing parents want. She will eat whatever kind of diet. I've read contracts where she can't eat fast food or she has to be on a vegan diet during the pregnancy. So there's a lot. So, you know, and what I call big fertility, the industry will say California is the model state because we have all this great legislation that protects everybody. And yes, we have a lot of legislation. It's not great, and it only protects those that are in power, those with the money. Now, as it goes to the other 50 states, most of the states are slowly adopting laws like California. So we have very few states that are silent, you know, like South Dakota is one. There's just no legislation, which basically means you can do it because you're not breaking the law. Where most of the states are slowly passing legislation, and most recently, Michigan was the last holdout, and now the Michigan governor has just signed into law legalizing commercial surrogacy in the state of Michigan.
Before we get, I have more questions just on the surrogacy topic, but you, through your writing and documentaries, you focus on ethical questions around so many of our medical industry practices that just really get brushed over, and that's why I really appreciate your work, and I'm so excited to talk to you, because it's almost like medical ethics have just gone out the window. No one wants to think or talk about them. But you did a documentary called Eggsploitation, I believe it was, about harvesting eggs from healthy young women. You've just talked about a lot of topics, and obviously gender medicine is a big one as well. What's the common thread that you found in investigating all these practices? Is it just money? Is that why people don't want to talk about it? What's the common thread?
Well, the common thread is that we are using healthy bodies, whether it be transgender affirmation therapy, and I'm using quotes, your audience can't, you know, I don't believe in that you could be transgender or you can change bodies. We're using healthy people, and we're doing things to them that they have no medical need to do. You have no medical need as a young woman on a college campus who's strapped for cash to put powerful high-dose fertility drugs in your body in order to produce eggs that a doctor needs to help somebody else have a baby. You have no medical need as a young girl who's confused with her identity and her body to have healthy breasts chopped off in a mastectomy. These are similar areas where you have medical doctors taking people who are not patients. You know, the egg donor isn't a patient. The surrogate mother, she's not a patient. They have no medical need for these procedures. And yet they're asked to do them, and they're asked to do them, and oh, by the way, here's a bunch of money. When was the last time your doctor asked you to take medication you don't need and pay you to do it? It doesn't happen. But in this area, we kind of go, well, it's okay, because these people want a baby, or this little girl thinks she's a boy, or whatever, and oh, by the way, we're going to make a pile of money. So is it money that's driving it? Is it ideology that's driving it? Is it this warped sense of what the proper role and duties of medicine and doctors are today? I think it's a combination of many of those things.
I was also wondering how you started investigating surrogacy. Was it kind of just an offshoot of looking at the ethical questions underlying all these various practices? What was the trigger for you to start looking into this?
It actually started a little before that, again, because I am from California, and we had many years ago our big Prop 71 bond initiative, which was Cures for California. We were going to do all the stem cell research. We were going to do all this human cloning, and Michael J. Fox and Christopher Reeve and Mary Tyler Moore were running around saying we have to destroy all these frozen human embryos because we've got to develop cures. And it was at that time I said, how did we come to have a half a million frozen human embryos in the United States that were up for this huge debate under the George Bush presidency? And I started having women contact me that had sold their eggs to make embryos, because all those embryos that were frozen that we were debating were made in IVF clinics for infertile couples that were trying to have babies. And all these young women, you know, one woman in my film was a Stanford grad, one was a UCLA grad, you know, one was a PhD student at the University of Kansas who now lived and worked in San Francisco, started contacting me and saying, I sold my eggs during college, and let me tell you how I almost died, how I lost my own fertility, how I got breast cancer. And so it was at that point I started really taking a deep dive into what is going on in assisted reproductive technology. And then we made a film on donor-conceived people called Anonymous Father's Day, you know, young men and women here today who have no idea who their sperm daddy is. And then I made a couple of films on surrogacy, because it's all part of the same package, using other healthy bodies to help people make babies.
Hmm. And were you a nurse at this time? Did you? Is this kind of how you started your career in documentaries?
No, I mean, I was a nurse first, and then I founded the Center for Bioethics and Culture, our nonprofit that's based in the Bay Area, and started making documentaries in that space because, you know, these are complex issues. Like you say, how do you get people to stop and care and really think about these things deeply? But, you know, I found the power of films. When you can watch a film and listen to 9 young women in America who thought they were helping somebody.
Yeah, well, we'll have to pick up on this right after the break. We're about to break for messages from our sponsors. We'll be right back. You're listening to Free Talk California, and I am speaking with Jennifer Lal. Stay with us.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Stuart Varney, and this is the Fox Business Report.
A choppy trading session with stocks finishing mixed to kick off the new trading month. Investors assessed a couple of disappointing updates on the economy, including a reading on U.S. manufacturing activity, which showed an easing for a second straight month in May. Tech and healthcare were among the best performers, while energy lagged and shares of NVIDIA popped 4% on optimism over the chipmaker's upcoming next generation of AI chips. And shares of GameStop surged over 20% after 3 years of Reddit silence. Meme stock influencer Keith Gill, known as Roaring Kitty, revealed that he was holding a massive GameStop position. The Dow winners, Boeing, Merck, and Apple. The Dow decliners, Chevron, Caterpillar, and Travelers. The Dow falling 115 points. The Nasdaq up 94. S&P 500 up 6. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, let's face it, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. There's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location in Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Saturday and has a dump station for your RV. To learn more, call Delta Liquid Energy, 805-239-0616, or go online to deltaliquidenergy.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Hammond Overhead Door Company has known for over 50 years that you have a choice when it comes to garage door services. That's why they utilize only the finest garage door materials and equipment, and their fleet of fully equipped service vehicles are ready to serve your maintenance and repair needs quickly and efficiently. Hammond Overhead Door Company. Call 238-0524 or go to HammondOverheadDoor.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Welcome back to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi, and with me is documentary maker Jennifer Lal. We were cut off before you were able to finish your thought, but you're talking about how you discovered the power of film in getting people to care about these medical ethical issues. So I'd love for you to finish that thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think as an example, in the early days when we were showing the film a lot, exploitation in movie theaters, we would ask the audience 5 short questions, then we would show the film, then we would ask them the same 5 questions afterwards. And they were brief questions like, you know, are you in support of egg donation? Do you think egg donation is safe? how much do you feel you know about egg donation? Really simple little questions people could answer quickly. And then we'd show them, you know, roughly a 45-minute film with these women telling what happened to them. And, you know, like in the high 90%, people's attitudes changed because they just didn't know. They didn't know it was risky. They didn't know there was short-term risk, long-term risk. You know, they had no clue. And they all walked away saying, I know a lot more about egg donation and egg selling than I ever did before. So we just have an educational gap, which is why people, they just see cuddly, cute babies, and that's, you know, that's as far as the depth of their thinking. And I think that's the power of documentary film. And, you know, the same with our two documentaries on surrogate mothers in the United States. You know, people go, wow, I didn't realize that these kind of things were happening and that it's really risky to, you know, mommy and baby's health.
We do have a listener call coming in. Welcome, you're on the air.
I'm not sure if this is what you guys are talking about, but what is your guess think about, like, genetic coding or, like, changing, you know, changing genes to, like, take things out that are harmful and how the ethics of that and, like, IVF and maybe, like, creating more superior genetic people than other people who can't afford it and how that could be a problem or am I just way out in outer space here?
Thanks for your question. Jennifer, did you hear that?
Yeah, I can hear it fine. It, obviously, that's a really big and fascinating question, and it is part of the area where I work. It's called CRISPR technology, or known as gene editing, which is like if you think of genes like Legos and you find the bad gene that passes on, say, Down syndrome or all the many different genetic diseases, you kind of cut it out and then replace it with the healthy gene. You know, there's obviously huge experimental problems here at play because we, you know, this is brand new technology. So I have a, you know, personal qualm with experimenting on future generations, you know, using, you know, babies that can't consent as guinea pigs. And, you know, we don't know if this is safe to literally splice out a gene and replace it with another gene. So, you know, and I'm not a big fan of eugenics and, you know, the whole movement to make better babies and perfect babies, and, you know, because we've been down that road in our history of eugenics many, many times, you know, not to play the Holocaust Nazi Germany card, but, you know, that was a big problem there was, you know, who can reproduce and who can't, and what kind of babies do we want to have. Now, that being said, I am a nurse, and I am interested in finding treatments and finding cures and finding help, you know, to people that have to live with chronic illnesses. But it's, you know, always first is ethics. Ethics matter, and how we get there, and should we do something? Those are questions that, you know, we need to think deeply about.
Yeah, I do have a question. So I had never thought of surrogacy before. I had never really thought of the ethical questions about it until I read a report. And unfortunately, it was years ago. I can't remember the source. I haven't been able to find it. So I believe it was a documentary, but it was basically a report that in India and Thailand, there was kind of this phenomenon of seeing white children on the street with Down syndrome who had been left by the Western couples who had commissioned them from local surrogates. And then when they were born with disabilities, they were rejected and abandoned. And again, I can't verify that, but it was a very shocking story, and kind of threw the whole, it made me start looking at this question. What are the stories that you've seen that have really shocked you and kind of kept you going in your exploration?
And it sounds like you're recalling a very famous case called the Baby Gammy case. And Baby Gammy was born to a surrogate mother in Thailand, obviously a very impoverished woman. Baby Gammy's parents were Australian. You know, whenever you see tourism and travel, it's usually because it's illegal in one country, so they go somewhere where it's legal. And Baby Gammy was one of a twin, and the other twin was healthy, and the Australian couple took the other twin back to Australia and raised them, and they left Baby Gammy with the mother in Thailand, who, the last I heard, she's still raising Baby Gammy. I mean, she kept the baby. She didn't give it up. But, yeah, you hear these stories all the time. You know, when Nepal had their huge earthquake, there was all these, you know, gay men in Israel, because then Israel had surrogacy was illegal to gay men. That law has changed. But you saw all these rich, wealthy gay men flying in on their planes from Israel, picking up the babies after the hurricane, I mean, after the earthquake debris had been cleared away. But, you know, leaving these impoverished women still in the ruins of Nepal that had been decimated by an earthquake. So those stories are very common. And those stories and have prompted a lot of the laws changing. Like, it's commercial international surrogacy is now illegal in India because they had so many of these cases where babies were left or babies were unwanted and discarded and women were exploited. But then the market shifts. So we have a huge booming Ukrainian surrogacy market. And these babies are still stuck there and surrogate mothers are pregnant in, you know, war-torn Ukraine. But people, when one border closes, the tourism and the reproductive tourism, you know, shifts. Which is why, you know, California is literally a reproductive tourist destination. Some fertility agencies in Southern California advertise how close they are to Disneyland. Come get a vacation. Come get a baby. You know, come rent a womb.
What, we have a few minutes left. How can people who want to know more learn more about this? And also, how can, especially since, as you note, this has really shifted. The borders of this has shifted, and they're now on our own soil. How can regular people get involved and make their voices heard?
Well, I think, for one, you know, they can follow me. I'm very active on X, what used to be known as Twitter, just my name, at Jennifer Lahl. We have, at the Center for Bioethics and Culture Network, our YouTube channel has all of our documentary films there for free viewing. You can watch all the films we've chatted about. Our website, cbc-network, you know, get on our mailing list. I think for people, you know, play to your strengths. You know, right now, one of the things I'm most committed to is closing our borders. You know, we have a window of opportunity where people are really interested in immigration and secure borders. Why don't we close our borders so 42-year-old single men aren't flying here to get babies to take back to God knows what country to do God knows what with? So, you know, some people write op-eds. Some people organize movie screenings, you know, show our movies, have your friends over, talk about it, write letters to your, you know, members of Congress. But get educated. You know, you watch two or three of our films, and in a couple hours, you'll have a lot more ammunition if you want to go out and start conversations with people.
There's also an organization in the UK who actually connected me to you, called Surrogacy Concern, and they've been very active on this front and helping people with templates for letters to representatives. And they kind of lay out in these template letters what to say. Have you done any lobbying in Sacramento? Have you met with any lawmakers?
Yeah, we are a 501c3, which means an educational organization. So we are allowed to lobby, but it can be a small percentage. But yeah, I have testified on Capitol Hill. I have testified in many, many hearings across the United States on various pieces of legislation, particularly around, you know, stem surrogacy or egg harvesting, egg selling. But we do, you know, a little bit of lobbying, but mostly, you know, when we are talking to our lawmakers, we're just trying to educate them too. I mean, our lawmakers are just like most of us. They're not experts in this area. You know, lawmakers can't be experts in everything. And so we're always just trying to catch their attention and say, you know, do we really want to risk healthy young women's bodies and lives, you know, and put them at risk? I mean, every time a surrogate mother dies, you have to remember that her husband lost his wife. Her children at home, you know, Michelle Reeves in California was the mother of two little children. Mm-hmm. They lost their mommy. It sort of triples and doubles down on all the harm when you think about the collateral damage of spouses and children.
Absolutely. We only have a minute left, but quickly, have you seen some signs of hope that people are thinking more ethically and more deeply about these questions?
Yeah, I think I definitely see that the conscience is raising on these matters. My concern, though, is a lot of the Republican and the kind of counted on conservatives. I mean, just like last week, Ted Cruz was saying we have to protect IVF. I mean, when Ted Cruz says we have to protect IVF, it's clear to me that Ted Cruz doesn't know what he's talking about. And so we've got a lot of our left and right Democrats and Republicans working together on this right to build a family kind of legislation coming to a state near you. You know, probably half of our states already are introducing pieces of legislation, and I think it's in the backdrop of Roe versus Wade.
Yeah.
We want to be sure that people can have a right to build a family, and when you say right to build a family, they mean any way they want. If they want to buy eggs, rent wombs, you know, whatever.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're
thank
out
you.
Of time. This is all we have to but thanks to all of you for listening, and see you next week. You're listening to Free Talk California.
Free Talk California is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. Ask about the daily specials. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.